Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, April 6th, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Trump Reopens Strait by Tuesday. He makes profanity-laced threat to Tehran as F-15E crew rescued. Tehran, U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday made expletive-laden new threats to escalate strikes on Iran and its infrastructure if it doesn't open the Strait of Hormuz by his deadline, after American forces rescued an aviator whose Iran-downed plane fell behind enemy lines. A defiant Iran struck infrastructure targets in neighboring Gulf Arab countries, challenged the U.S. account of the rescue, and threatened to restrict another heavily used waterway in the region, the Bab el Mandeb Strait off the Arabian Peninsula. In the social media post, Trump vowed to hit Iran's power plants and bridges and said the country would be living in hell if the Strait of Hormuz, crucial for global trade, isn't opened by Tuesday. He ended with, "Praise be to Allah." Trump has issued such deadlines before, but extended them when mediators have claimed progress towards ending the war, which has killed thousands, shaken global markets, and spiked fuel prices in just over 5 weeks. It seems Trump has become a phenomenon that neither Iranians nor Americans are able to fully analyze, Iranian Culture Minister Syed Reza Salehi Amiri told visiting Associated Press journalists in an interview in Tehran, adding that the president constantly shifts between contradictory positions. Both sides have threatened and hit civilian targets like oil fields and desalination plants, critical for drinking water. Iran's UN mission on social media called Trump's threat clear evidence of intent to commit war crime. Iran's military joint command warned of stepped-up retaliatory attacks on regional oil and civilian infrastructure if the U.S. and Israeli attack such targets there, according to state television. The laws of armed conflict allow attacks on civilian infrastructure only if the military advantage outweighs the civilian harm, legal scholars say. It's considered a high bar to clear, and causing excessive suffering to civilians can constitute a war crime. An intense search had followed Friday's crash of the F-15E Strike Eagle, while Iran promised a reward for the enemy pilot. Trump said the service member was seriously wounded and really brave, and rescued from deep inside the mountains in an operation involving dozens of armed aircraft. He said a second crew member was rescued in broad daylight within hours of the crash. A senior U.S. administration official said that prior to locating the pilot, the CIA spread word inside Iran that if U.S. forces had found him and were moving him for exfiltration, confusing Iranian officials. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss details not yet made public. The fighter jet was the first known American aircraft to crash in Iranian territory since the U.S. and Israel launched the war with strikes on Iran on February 28th. Iran also shot down another U.S. military plane, demonstrating both the perils of the bombing campaign and the ability of Iran's degraded military to hit back. Neither the status of the A-10 attack aircraft's crew nor where it crashed is known. On Sunday, Iran's state television aired a video showing what it claimed were parts of U.S. aircraft shot down by Iranian forces. The broadcaster said that Iran had shot down a transport plane and two helicopters that were part of the rescue operation. However, a regional intelligence official briefed on the mission told the Associated Press that the U.S. military blew up two transport planes because of a technical malfunction and brought in additional aircraft to complete the rescue. The official spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss the covert mission. Two Black Hawk helicopters helicopters were hit during the rescue, but navigated to safe airspace, according to a person familiar with the situation who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive information. Trump's upcoming deadline centers on growing alarm over Iran's grip on the Strait of Hormuz, critical for shipments of oil and gas from the Persian Gulf to Europe and Asia, as well as humanitarian supplies. Some ships have paid Iran for passage. An Iranian presidential spokesperson, Syed Mohammad Mehdi Tabatabi, said on social media that the strait can reopen only if some transit revenues compensate Iran for war damages. A top Iranian advisor, Ali Akbar Velayati, warned on social media that Tehran could also disrupt trade on the Bab el-Mandeb, a key waterway to and from the Suez Canal. Diplomatic efforts continued. Oman's foreign ministry said that deputy foreign ministers and experts from Iran and Oman met to discuss proposals to ensure smooth transit through the strait. Oman has often served as a mediator between U.S. and Iran. Egypt said that Foreign Minister Badr Abdelhadi had spoken with U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff and Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, as well as with Turkish and Pakistani counterparts. Islamabad has said that it would soon host talks between the U.S. and Iran. In Kuwait, Iranian drone attacks caused significant damage to power plants and a petrochemical plant. They also put a water desalination station out of service, according to the Ministry of Electricity. In Bahrain, a drone attack caused a fire at one of the national oil company's storage facilities and a state-run petrochemical plant, the kingdom's official news agency said. In the United Arab Emirates, authorities responded to fires at a petrochemical plant in Ruwais that they said were caused by intercepted debris halting operations. The strikes came a day after Israel struck a major petrochemical plant in Iran that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said generated revenue used to fund the war. The petrochemical industry converts oil and gas into products like plastics and fertilizer. More than 1,900 people have been killed in Iran since the war began. In Gulf Arab states and the occupied West Bank, more than 24 people have died, while 19 have been reported dead in Israel, and 13 U.S. service members have been killed. In Lebanon, more than 1,400 people have been killed, and more than 1 million people have been displaced. 10 Israeli soldiers have died there. Still on the front page, just a short not even an article. Title: Dream Falls Short. Illinois Deep Run Ends in Semifinal Loss to UConn. David Mirkovic and Keaton Wagler walk off the court after Illinois' 71-62 loss to UConn in a Final Four semifinal on Saturday, April 4, 2026, at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Still on the front page, final weed license suit in court at last. Applicants, fair shot denied in lottery-style legalization rollout. Nearly 7 years after Illinois lawmakers approved recreational cannabis legalization, applicants who lost out on coveted business licenses are still battling the state in court, alleging the law's rollout undermined its purported equity goals. At the time of its passage in 2019, supporters of Illinois' landmark law touted it as the most equity-centric legalized cannabis program in the nation. But one of the centerpieces of that legislation, setting aside the majority of cannabis business licenses for social equity applicants disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, proved more complicated than the law's authors had imagined, setting off years of litigation over the process. The final lawsuit of dozens filed following the first cannabis licensing lottery in 2020 finally got its day in court this week, marking the conclusion of a years-long legal saga testing the state's legalization policy. But it's also the last chance for the plaintiff, Wellbeing Holistic Group, to have an opportunity for a dispensary license after all four of its applications lost in three lotteries. "We just want a fair shot," the Reverend Otis Davis said after a hearing in the case Wednesday. "We're not asking for anything special, no special privileges, but what they promised from the very beginning. So we just saying, hey, that the system is broken, then it should redo it, and they should give everybody a chance." Davis preaches at Repairs of the Breach Ministries in Chicago's Back of the Yards neighborhood and unsuccessfully ran for Chicago City Council in 2019. He was part of the team that applied for dispensary licenses as Wellbeing Holistic Group in 2020. Chris Harris, an attorney who represented Davis, teamed up with his client along with Harris' friend and business partner David Roberts to submit the applications. Harris was blunt in his assessment of Davis's value to the team. Otis being a veteran, Otis being a practicing minister on the south side of Chicago, coming from a disproportionately impacted area, we had what we thought was a perfect team and a team that was designed to win this type of license. In fact, Wellbeing Holistic Group's applications received perfect scores, but still didn't win a license. While most lawsuits filed against the state after the lottery process were from applicants who disputed their scores for a chance to be included in the lottery, Wellbeing's case argues a different legal theory, which attorney Chris Carmichael of Henderson Parks said is the most difficult path of all lawsuits. Wellbeing argues that the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, which operated the lotteries, improperly allowed roughly 450 illegible entries into the lottery of 901 applicants for dispensary licenses in the Chicago region. That, Wellbeing argues, nearly doubled the size of the pool and reduced others' chances of winning. Wellbeing alleges the entry should have been flagged as ineligible because corporate dispensaries that already had a footprint in Illinois medical cannabis market had their fingerprints on applicants for social equity dispensary licenses. In one case, Carmichael said, a company paid for roughly $500,000 in application fees, something IDFPR said the consultants hired to vet applicants and conduct the lotteries should have caught, as the remitter line on those cashier's checks contained the name of the company. IDFPR maintains it did its due diligence by checking out the individuals named as principal officers on the license applications, which the agency argues would have caught any attempts to flout application limits or hide true ownership of the entity behind the application. But Wellbeing argues vetting only individuals missed the forest for the trees, causing IDFPR to overlook dozens of applications having the same corporate sponsorship. Alex Moe, a lawyer from the Illinois Attorney General's office, told Cook County Judge Patrick Stanton on Wednesday that Wellbeing was missing, that consultants were expected to take part in the application process. There were no rules against those consultants paying for application fees either, he said, unless consultants had undisclosed financial interest in the entity applying for licenses. Further, Moe said, Wellbeing's theory of mathematical unfairness in the lotteries is fundamentally incorrect. Even if Wellbeing is correct and half of the applicants should not have been in there, it doesn't change the outcome, he said. By following the paper trail created by the lottery, Moe said IDFPR recalculated what would have happened if the applications Wellbeing's allege should have marked ineligible weren't in the pool. Wellbeing would have placed 126th out of 450, he said. That's something we know with mathematical certainty, that Wellbeing would not have received a winning drawing, Moe said. Corrective lottery but Carmichael pointed out that since the state has social equity cannabis dispensary license going unused, the only possible meaningful thing to do is to run a corrective lottery. The state already ran corrective lotteries after initial litigation held up the license awarding process for a year. The first dispensaries owned by social equity license holders didn't open until November of 2022, nearly 3 years after the application process opened. As of January, only 64% of licensed social equity dispensaries were operational, according to an analysis by the Chicago Reporter. Stanton, who pointed out multiple times during Wednesday's hearing that IDFPR had wide latitude over interpreting state statute, said he understood Wellbeing's claims but seemed skeptical of its arguments that a court should step in and tell a state agency how to do its job. It sounds to me like there was some vetting done before the lottery. Maybe not the level of vetting you think should have been done, he told Carmichael. You're saying they didn't do enough, and I feel like, okay, that's sort of the decision of the department. The judge said he would need more proof that IDFPR didn't follow statute in order for judicial review to be warranted. They did something, Stanton said, of IDFPR, perhaps not enough. Applying the standards they did, it seems to me, they caught what they should have caught. The judge is set to rule at a May 21st hearing. And our last article from the front page, high gas prices hit workers who drive on the job. Leslie Sherman Schaefer, an Uber driver in the San Francisco Bay Area, likes to start each shift with a full tank of gas. It used to cost her around $25 to fill up her Toyota Corolla. She spent closer to $40 since the Iran war began and pushed up the average U.S. price for a gallon of regular gasoline by a dollar. Sherman Schaefer, a retired dental office assistant who picks up Uber passengers 5 days a week, said she's putting in extra hours to cover the difference. We don't get reimbursed for gas. We rely on the generosity of the tip, Sherman Schaefer said. Some passengers have tipped more to compensate for higher gas prices, but most don't tip at all, she said. Driving a car, van, or truck is a big part of many Americans' workdays. Nearly 27% of civilian workers cited driving as a physical demand of their jobs last year, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Millions of drivers use personal vehicles for their work, from delivery and rideshare providers to self-employed electricians, nannies, home health care aides, and real estate agents. As the war enters a fifth week and continues to disrupt global oil supplies, many of those workers are now scrambling to make ends meet. The national average price for gas reached $4.02 per gallon on Tuesday, according to AAA. Some companies compensate employees for using their own vehicles, including the cost of gas. In the U.S., the Internal Revenue Service sets a standard mileage rate every year that businesses and private contractors can use to calculate tax deductions. Alpine Maids, a housekeeping company based in Denver, pays cleaners the 2026 federal reimbursement rate of 72.5 cents per mile for the distance they drive to clients' homes. But with gas prices spiking, that money is not going as far, said Chris Willett, a former geologist who now runs Alpine Maids. Our maids drive their own cars, so it's kind of like their paycheck got smaller, Willett said. They're all upset. Willett said he reduced how often maids must report to the office from daily to once a week and rearranged cleaning assignments so employees aren't driving as far between clients. If gas prices climb further, he said, he might increase what he charges customers so he can pay workers more. Molly Kenefick, owner of Doggy Llama Pet Care, Inc., in Oakland, California, said she recently raised her gas reimbursement rate to 80 cents per mile for 15 employees who use their own vehicles to pick up dogs and take them for hikes around the Bay Area. The rate increase will stay in place until gas prices in their area drop below $5 for at least a month, she said. Kenefic said she planned to raise prices for the company's services in May, but she doesn't want to increase them too much because she's worried she'll lose clients. So Kenefic is also dipping into her savings to pay for gas. The economy is hard for people. Everybody's under strain, she said. I can take some of the load, and the company can take some of the load, provided this doesn't go on too long. Ride-hailing and food delivery platforms that rely on gig workers don't reimburse drivers for gas, but some are offering temporary incentives in response to rising gas prices. DoorDash, Uber, Lyft, and Instacart are providing more than the usual cash back on gas purchases for drivers who use company-branded debit cards. DoorDash and Instacart are giving a weekly fuel payment to drivers who travel 125 miles or more making deliveries. Sarah Knoll, who spends about 20 hours a week making deliveries for DoorDash in Lynchburg, Virginia, said the measures help somewhat. But, she said, she's noticed more customers declining to add tips to their orders as gas prices have increased. Knoll has started refusing any order that won't average out to $1 per mile, including the $2.50 per order she gets from DoorDash. That cancels out many users who aren't tipping or giving only small tips. It takes nearly double the cost to fill my tank, Knoll said. $10 used to get me a decent amount. Now it only gets me 3 gallons. Owners of diesel-powered vehicles have seen even steeper fuel price increases since the war started on February 28th, affecting drivers around the world. Drivers of diesel-powered jeepneys in the Philippines went on strike for 2 days last week to protest their higher costs. In France, dozens of buses and trucks drove slowly on the Paris Ring Road Monday to demonstrate their concerns about rising diesel prices. Drivers and businesses want the French government to provide aid to mitigate the impact. Average U.S. diesel prices climbed 44% over the last month, according to AAA. A few weeks ago, Rachel Hunter paid $3.62 a gallon to fill the single diesel truck used by Cactus Crew Junk Removal and Thrift Store, a Phoenix business she and her husband co-founded. The same fuel now costs $6.09 per gallon in Phoenix, according to AAA. The truck carries all kinds of heavy cargo, from slabs of solid maple bowling lanes to loads of concrete paver tiles, so fuel costs quickly add up, Hunter said, particularly with a truck that only gets 12 or 13 miles to the gallon. Hunter has started quoting prices that reflect the jump in prices. She worries that she's in a vicious circle that could hurt the business if oil prices remain high. We don't want to get a bad name for being overpriced, she says. Our next article from the local news. Police break up crowded fight. Officers say pepper spray used. Warnings to stop fighting ignored. Decatur. Police said the arrival of several squad cars, lights and sirens activated, didn't do anything to stop a large group of people engaged in a street fight in the early hours of Saturday morning in Decatur. 911 calls had alerted officers at 1:46 a.m. to the ongoing battle in a parking lot in the 1000 block of West Main Street. The officers showed up to find multiple different subjects fighting in the lot, and some people had been knocked to the ground, said Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department. Those involved did not stop fighting after the officers arrived with their sirens and lights activated, and they did not stop when the officers gave them orders to disperse. They also disregarded warnings that pepper spray would be used to stop the fighting, and then pepper spray was deployed to break up the crowd and stop the violence. Rolf says reports from the scene did not guesstimate the size of the crowd involved, but he said it was large enough that trying to make individual arrests would have been difficult. He said patrol officers' main task was to end the fighting and disperse the combatants before anyone became seriously injured. All of those involved ended up leaving the area, and there was nobody who ended up getting any treatment, Rolfs added. Dealing with unruly mobs on Decatur streets has been a persistent and often dangerous problem for law enforcement. One of the most violent incidents occurred August 10th, when an early morning street party in the 1100 block of East Main Street involving some 300 to 400 people ended in chaos and gunfire. Police had been on their way after receiving reports of street fights and the presence of multiple gunmen. When they arrived, officers reported hearing the sounds of bullets whizzing past overhead as they struggled to disperse the mob. Later, around 5 a.m., a 20-year-old woman and a man aged 27 showed up seeking treatment at the emergency room of HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. The woman had a gunshot wound to the hand, and the male had been shot 4 times, a wound in both arms and a wound in each of his legs. Both victims said they'd been at the street party and were shot as they tried to flee. Speaking at the time, Rolfe's had gatherings like this in the summer months had become a serious issue and chaotic. Violent street parties were drawing participants from far outside the Decatur area. Our next article, Trump's Medicaid crackdown yields few violators. Last August, as part of the federal government's crackdown on people in the country illegally, the Trump administration sent states the names of hundreds of thousands of Medicaid enrollees with orders to determine whether they were ineligible based on immigration status. But 7 months later, findings from 5 states shared with KFF Health News show that the reviews have uncovered little evidence of widespread problem. Only U.S. citizens and some lawfully present immigrants are eligible for Medicaid, which covers health care costs for people with low incomes and disabilities, and the closely related Children's Health Insurance Program. Both programs are administered by states. Spokesperson from Pennsylvania's and Colorado's Medicaid agency said, as of March, the states found no one who needed to be terminated from Medicaid. That was after checking a combined 79,000 names. Texas reviewed records of more than 28,000 Medicaid enrollees at the Trump administration's request and terminated coverage for 77 of them, according to Jennifer Ruffcorn, the spokesperson for the Texas Department of Human Services. Ohio checked 65,000 Medicaid enrollees, of which 260 people were disenrolled from the program, said Stephanie O'Grady, a spokesperson for the Ohio Department of Medicaid. In Utah, 42 of the 8,000 enrollees identified by Trump administration had their medical coverage terminated, said Becky Wickstrom, a spokesman for the State Department's Workforce Services. In announcing the reviews, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said, "We are tightening oversight of enrollment to safeguard tax dollar payers and guarantee that these vital programs serve only those who are truly eligible under the law." Leonardo Culo, a research professor at Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families, said the reviews ordered by the Federal Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services were unneeded because states check immigration status when people sign up. It is entirely predictable that all of these burdensome reviews that the federal government is forcing upon states would yield no pay dirt, Quello said. The states had already done the reviews once, and CMS was just making them re-verify the same information they'd already checked, making states go through the same bureaucratic process twice is incredibly wasteful and inefficient. CMS spokesperson Chris Krepich said in a statement to KFF Health News that the ongoing checks were verifying eligibility for certain enrollees whose status could not be confirmed through federal data sources. CMS provides states with regular reports for follow-up review, and states are responsible for independently verifying eligibility and taking appropriate action consistent with federal requirements, he said. But the findings shared with KFF Health News also suggest that many of the enrollees whose eligibility the Trump administration said it could not confirm are indeed U.S. citizens. O'Grady said Ohio found that of the 65,000 names referred by the federal government, the state already had information on 53,000 confirming them as citizens and an additional 11,000 showing appropriate immigration status for Medicaid. Caseworkers then worked on the remaining 1,000 names to review their information or reach out for more details, she said. CMS did not answer questions about findings from the states sampled by KFF Health News or provide information about responses it received from all 50 states and the District of Columbia, which were instructed to perform verification checks. Thank you for listening.